You're listening to The College Connection from New England Public Radio. I'm Casey Gilman. The College Connection is a series of lectures from visiting and local speakers given and recorded at the five colleges. This forum provides an opportunity for listeners to engage with the researchers, intellectuals, poets, and authors active within our academic communities. Patrice Rushen chairs the popular music program at the University of Southern California's Thornton School of Music. Although her early training was in classical music, she is a jazz pianist and R&B singer, perhaps best known for her popular music of the 70s and 80s. A four-time Grammy nominee, Rushen has also composed scores for television and film. Rushen was invited to Amherst College to talk about why USC started the popular music program and how it fills an underserved artistic need in America. Her talk, Teaching Popular Music in Institutions of Higher Learning, was recorded on April 10, 2017 at Amherst College.
Hello, and thank you very much. Really very, very happy to have been invited to speak with you today. And it's so nice to hear that this area of contemporary music palette is receiving such great attention and inspiring educational development. My music career and journey is taking me many places and has afforded me many opportunities to participate in some pretty high profile gigs. I have had responsibilities as a side musician with bands ranging from jazz quartets to huge pop and rock shows in arenas and stadiums, to leading groups of my own, producing albums, composing film and TV scores, to music direction of some of the most prestigious live shows and television events. I come to you today to speak from the vantage point of a practitioner who is an educator. For some of you, my experiences as a music student will sound familiar. I was brought into the musical fold via classical music, classical piano at age 5, after taking 3 years of eurythmics as a participant in USC's Music Education Preparatory Division for Children, which later became the Colburn School of Performing Arts in Los Angeles. I had the good fortune of having wonderful teachers who worked with me to learn to play important piano repertoire and develop good piano technique. When I was 10, Dr. Dorothy Bishop, who was also head of the prep department, became my piano teacher. Her emphasis included the communication of the music through the awareness of style, phrasing, conscious of form, harmonic theory, recurring motifs, historical and social context. When I was a kid, this was just a bunch of seemingly unnecessary information. At 10 years old, I just wanted to play the right notes and keep moving. I had other things to do, like roller skate and ride bikes with my friends. For some reason, Ms. Bishop tolerated my superficial boredom with all of her explanations and demonstrations during my weekly piano lessons. When I wanted to play for her the James Brown or Beatles song that I had picked up from the radio instead of the Bach or Brahms piece that I was assigned to have prepared for my lesson, she would not only indulge me, but deftly blend and bend and twist and modify the lesson so that she related these pieces to one another. She was downright motivating. My mom later told me Ms. Bishop would say to her, just get her here and keep her coming. I guess she knew that eventually her words and her actions would get through to me, and they did. I studied with her until I was 17 years old, entering college at the University of Southern California, majoring in music education, piano performance. USC, when there was no jazz and certainly no popular studies at that time. I'm so stoked on how far we've come. Also during those years, my parents, who didn't play any instruments but were lovers of great music, loaded their turntable with recordings that they ordered from the Columbia Record Club. We got Ella Fitzgerald, Miles Davis, Perry Como, Frank Sinatra, Ray Charles, Beethoven, Schubert, Chopin, Aretha Franklin, Duke Ellington records, one record a month. Songs of the Freedom Fighters during the Civil Rights Movement. Songs of the Flower Children, Joan Baez, Dylan, Simon and Garfunkel, and songs from the Rolling Stones. They played them back to back for hours and hours. Music was around me all the time. at home, at church, and at school. I mention this because I think this was the start of the development of my eclectic musical tastes and vocabulary. No stylistic limitations or barriers. Only the recognition of that which had special qualities indeed, but more in keeping with the level of the feeling and the communication of the music than by category. I also could witness firsthand how music not only touched me, but touched the lives of the people around me. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and for many years, the lady who lived directly across the street from me would occasionally have rehearsals in her garage. It was a small group, and she sang a mean blues and some of the most soulful rhythm and blues I have heard to this day. Her name was Etta James. During those Saturday rehearsals, I watched my parents throw the doors and windows open, even if it was a cold day, so we could hear her music better. As a high school student, I attended a new school in the community called Locke High School, L-O-C-K-E, for Alain Leroy Locke. The music program there was led by three caring and daring individuals who used the music program as one way to encourage us to stay off the streets and to keep us busy. One of the many devices they used to help us learn not only music, but African-American culture, was jazz. We regularly took field trips to the concert halls to be exposed to the LA Philharmonic, but also to certain jazz clubs, where we sat in the back, drank fruit punch, watched, and listened to the masters of this music in their laboratories, expanding and exploring. I heard a lot of the greats, and the experience of seeing all of these musicians was so important to my development. One can learn so much from observing. During these years at the same high school, an up-and-coming band used our multipurpose room for rehearsals occasionally. We were encouraged to watch them and listen as they developed their sound and early presentation. That band was Earth, Wind, and Fire. Observing Maurice White's process with this band and the steps taken to get the groove was an unforgettable experience. I rely on some of what I saw then to this day. Plus, it's so cool to say that Earth, Wind, and Fire played my high school prom. And it's true. For a very long time, though I'd played piano for well over a decade, it wasn't really until high school that I began to sense what I wanted to do as my life's work was music. The biggest challenge for me was that I wanted to play, I wanted to write, I wanted to conduct, I wanted to record contemporary music. My higher education in this area of music became the school of experience. I had learned how to observe, conceptualize, and take in. I eventually connected the dots. I began to determine what I wanted in the way of a career in music, even though I wasn't completely sure of the path of how to get there. Certain artists and master practitioners with whom I worked showed me what I lacked, told me what I needed, and I did the work. It was the exposure to all of these things that informed my musical sensibilities and aesthetic. I was lucky, coming up in a place and at a time when I could get certain information and see examples of what various music careers looked like. I went to college at the insistence of my parents. This was a safe bet as a music student in their eyes. This was several years before jazz studies was part of most higher education offerings. And there was certainly, as I said, no popular music study at that time. I was a music education major with the classical piano performance minor with the intention of doing neither. It was fine, and I did well, but it wasn't what I really wanted. This brings me to the point of the why and the how of the popular music program that we have currently at Thornton. Between the years of about 1992 and 2002, while simultaneously pursuing a music career as a guitarist and songwriter, Christopher Sampson became director and dean of admission at USC Thornton, where he conducted auditions for the entire school, undergrad and grad, in classical and jazz. From this vantage point, he was in the unique position to see which students were served by a traditional music program and which students were not. He observed that if a student identified or had an interest in popular music during the application process, the following would happen. They would be denied admission, regardless of their talent. They would be admitted into a somewhat related music degree that didn't exactly meet their needs, i.e., classical vocal arts or music business or jazz. This often led to disillusionment and inhibited degree completion. Or they would simply choose another field, English literature. Or they wouldn't go to school at all. It is from that admissions experience that Chris determined that there was a significant pent-up demand from serious, professionally minded students who did not fall into a jazz or classical box. This demand was unseen because the vast majority of these students simply would never file an application to begin with, because they already knew that most university programs in music did not meet their needs. In other words, they would simply self-select out. In 2003, Chris inherited the Songwriting 1 class at USC. This was a small 13-member enrollment. It was an elective made up exclusively of non-music majors, so engineering, business, communication majors, etc. Within 2 years, that songwriting class grew so rapidly into multiple sections and multiple levels. The class began producing small grassroots songwriter showcases in a variety of venues. A few students who were taking the songwriting classes actually began to have professional success as touring musicians and doing recordings. Again, drawing on admissions experience, knowing there was an untapped applicant pool, and building off the momentum of the songwriting classes, Chris proposed to create a Bachelor of Music degree that would expand beyond the songwriters and include instrumentalists and vocalists. The proposal is based upon the mission statement of USC Thornton, which says that our school will reflect the artistic landscape of Los Angeles. And I argue that without a program that addresses popular styles, then we are not fulfilling our mission as an institution. In 2005, the proposal was approved in concept by the Thornton School of Music's Dean, Rob Cruchieto. It took about 4 more years as Chris researched and wrote the curriculum for the new Bachelor of Music degree in popular music. This is done through extensive conversations with professional musicians, as well as drawing on his own professional experience. During this time, certain issues came up for us. Problems in nomenclature. There was a challenge in coming up with the right name for the program, as each name we came up with had its own shortcomings. For example, commercial music. There already were a few programs in the country that called themselves a commercial music program. Chris's research found that this term immediately had a negative connotation, as it gave the impression that it involved music making exclusively for a marketplace without any artistic value. So many commercial music curriculums that he reviewed were primarily repurposed jazz degrees with a couple of music technology courses thrown in. In almost every case, commercial music programs were regarded as substandard in their institution. Students had a second-class citizen standing, and it seemed to be a dumping ground for apparently less talented students. This dynamic needed to be strongly avoided. Then there was the idea of calling it contemporary music. The challenge with this term is that it can be equally applied regardless of genre. One can refer to contemporary music in concert classical music, in jazz, as well as in popular styles. Therefore, it didn't quite capture this program. Popular music. In spite of the term having the most broad application, it can easily be reduced down to pop music, which immediately conjures up a relatively small subgenre that is exclusively radio-friendly with a very young demographic. While none of the terms were perfect, Chris decided to go with popular music, thinking that it was the most applicable to the degree. Problems with pedagogy. Through research and conversations with colleagues, it became clear that we couldn't take an existing curricular approach such as a jazz or classical degree and just superimpose it upon popular musicians. It was evident that this field and these students would need a new and different approach. Fraught with challenges, however, some of them included, that we needed a dynamic peer learning environment. While individual ability and talent remains important, it was critical to create a peer learning environment that fostered skills in collaboration, professionalism, cooperation, and leadership. Therefore, the popular music program was organized into a cohort learning environment, each cohort being limited to 25 students, or as close to 25 as we can get. Establishing the critical balance between learning from the oral tradition and standard notation. The origins of popular music derives from an oral tradition. It's through this oral tradition where style-specific performance practices, nuances, and stylistic understanding make the music come alive. However, traditional musicianship, reading, notation, theory, etc., are also important to provide the added skill sets and music literacy that is worthy of a music degree. And I must say that monitoring and maintaining this precarious balance has been one of the most fascinating things in our program. If the oral tradition is stressed too much, the students are able to play very convincingly, but are limited in many situations that require reading and analysis. If traditional note reading is stressed too much, then the stylistic nuances are missed in their performances, making for an unsatisfactory and often not very authentic interpretation. Emphasis on music creation. While studying an already established style and genre is essential to learning the music vocabulary, and there is an emphasis on selected repertoire, new music and music creation is the lifeblood of popular styles. Therefore, the ultimate goal isn't to simply learn previous styles and genres covering tunes, but it is to leverage and transform these traditions into something new and different and unique. Popular music is inherently interdisciplinary. In addition to the musical training involved in a popular music program, it was also apparent that the degree would require music business, technology, and career training. And lastly, popular music specific classrooms and environments. The majority of popular music is an amplified music activity. Amplified music requires entirely different acoustic and teaching environments than the usual classical or jazz programs. Therefore, an ongoing and significant effort was put forward to create studios, sound stages, rehearsal rooms, and venues that had the necessary space, acoustics, and technology to handle this approach. During the period between about 2005-2009, the proposal for the BM in popular music was met with significant debate and in some cases outright resistance among faculty and committees at USC Thornton. This resistance was based primarily on fear, understandable, fear of change and fear of the unknown, protection of territory, fear that the inclusion of popular music might intrude on an already established ownership and territory, and the protection of a reputation, concern that the bringing in of popular music would diminish the excellent reputation of USC Thornton. As such, much time and energy was spent addressing these concerns, in particular, establishing confidence that the program would remain and maintain the very high standards at USC Thornton. About 2008, the program received formal approval from the university and USC Thornton committees, and we were able to accept applications for the inaugural class in fall of 2009. When the program was announced, it was covered on the front page of the LA Times in their calendar section, and the article quickly went viral for some reason, which reinforced my feeling that there was a real pent-up demand for a program that addressed this area. In 2009, the Bachelor of Music and Popular Music degree received formal program approval and accreditation from the National Association of Schools of Music, NASM. and we believe this is the first of its kind. USC is no longer associated with NASM, but we were very pleased to get the accreditation. 2009, we enrolled our first class of 25 students into the Bachelor of Music of Popular Music. The program attracted such a significant applicant pool that it was immediately the most selected program at USC Thornton. The first year of the program had only one staff member, two small studios which doubled as rehearsal rooms when they were not being used as recording studios, and mostly loaned equipment from Chris Sampson's personal storage facility. 2010, I formally joined as artist in residence and ultimately became chair in 2013. Thornton School of Music was restructured as three divisions: classical, ethnomusicology, and contemporary music. Chris is vice dean of the Division of Contemporary Music, which houses five programs: popular music, jazz studies, music production and technology, music industry, and film scoring. And I'm the chair of the popular music program. 2013, we graduated our first popular music class. Members of this class have toured nationally and internationally, are signed to significant publishing and recording contracts. Some have started their own businesses and have significant TV and film placements for their music. And it continues. Our enrollment and graduation rate continues to be very, very high. And our faculty are practitioners of this part of the craft. For example, our drum teacher has played with Frank Sinatra, Miles Davis, and Michael Jackson. He was in this video, Ndugu Chancellor. And you've heard him before. If you've ever heard George Duke, you've heard Ndugu. If you've heard the song Billie Jean, you've heard Ndugu, the drums at the beginning of the song. So he's the drum teacher. Alfonso Johnson, who was one of the original members of Weather Report, who's played with Santana and countless other musicians, is our bass instructor. Every instructor has a relationship to popular music. Paul Jackson Jr. is our guitar teacher. We have several others. One right now, Andy Abad, who's playing with J-Lo right now, Jennifer Lopez. Everyone is still practicing and still doing this, whether they are the vocal instructor or the drum instructor. Today, thankfully, there are a significant number of colleges and university programs who have interest in supporting and developing a curriculum for an ever-growing popular music student population, the demands for which stem from the needs of our students to have access to knowledge which provides them options. Options in a fast-paced world where the definitions of success have as much to do with self-discovery, contribution, and commitment to excellence as ambition, drive, and monetary gain. We must find ways to feed their passion about the music and show them the value of possessing a skill set on which to start their journeys as professional musicians. Through this study, students gain access and awareness concerning other related areas of the music industry. There are performers, but there are educators, music technicians, sound specialists, studio recording artists, recording engineers, recording producers, concert producers, software designers, TV and film and video composers, artist managers, music publishers, songwriters, and the list goes on, and various combinations of the above exist. They are related and interdependent in today's musical landscape. From a professional practitioner's point of view, most of the musicians who work a lot do so because they bring to the table their talents, but also a level of understanding about their role and how they can best contribute to the musical situation. They can be contributors to the overall goal, and typically because they themselves don't immediately see limitations, especially if they have skills. They have learned how to learn. They can bring an openness to do more and to give more. These are also life skills. The notion of popular music being a course of study to some people still sounds pretty strange. This area of music embodies and embraces every part of the musical language and landscape in a way in which most people can grasp the most fundamental importance of any art form, and that is that it has a point of view and is felt and it's communicated. It is no longer practical for us as educators to assume that students who come to us with a desire to play rock or fusion, alternative, pop, or dance music and the like have had the support at their middle schools or at high schools by giving them certain theory and harmony foundational material. They may or may not have ever participated in an ensemble which resembles anything close to what they think they want to do. Working on methods to equip these students with solid musical knowledge and information on which they can build their skills is at once our challenge and our duty. Webster's Dictionary defines the word teach as this: to teach is to give to another knowledge or skill which one has oneself, to train, to give instruction to. Teach is a verb implying action, movement, interaction, and involvement. We know as artists that for us, teaching is also most often a personal, emotional, stressful experience as we attempt to work with our students, knowing that our own experiences so often surface as we watch the students struggle with not only the mysteries of music and music making, but with the challenges that life and being on one's own can bring. Because the life of these individuals are so connected to their ultimate means of expression, it is not unrealistic that while there are times of great joy and pride in our young people's accomplishments, there are also times of great drain and strain, as our own artistic sensibilities cannot help but be called into play. Delicate and special is and should be the relationship of teacher to student, mentor, disciple. My personal experience as a student and with my students continues to help shape my philosophy concerning teaching. It involves what Ms. Bishop, the piano teacher I had for so many years, what she did: information, demonstration, participation. Information: tell me what, tell me how, point a way. Demonstration: show me, let me see it being done, help me apply it. Participation: let me try it. Let me try it and fail, and motivate me to try it again and again and again. It is of primary importance that as educators, we realize that we are also perpetual students. Ever so often, we too need to reevaluate our goals, our methods, our messages. Teaching is a living art. The times in which we live greatly influence each class, each student, the mindset, the self-control, levels of discipline, the creative drive, physical stamina, common sense, and the occasional lack thereof. These are all issues and concerns that make it impossible for us to get so caught up in our own methods to the point that we don't continually evaluate their effectiveness with our students. As I think about it, for every similarity with a student from quote unquote back in the day with today's youth, there are differences in their approach to so many things. Some of it generational, some of it environmental, some of it spiritual, but all of it requiring careful, thoughtful evaluation of our goals as teachers, all the while sensitive to the potential of the power of our influence that this at this critical stage of development of these creative, artistic young minds. It's about keeping our own passions fired up and remembering the joy and the spirit that brought each of us to music in the first place, recalling those special moments in our own lives that mean so much. Chris Sampson did, and he created a music education experience he wished he'd had as a college student. And I could relate to that, big time. Remembering that sometimes it isn't about the particular assignment or show or recital, as much as it can be about the process, the journey. The creative spirit in anything depends on the individual finding the joys and victories during the process. A songwriter writing a more meaningful descriptive lyric, the discovery and execution of the elements of a great improvised solo, the nuance and power of silence in a composition, the love that emanates from the ultimate in communication without words, the language of music. Our adventures as teachers, staff, and advisors continues. And we need not be afraid of change as long as our basic values and goals remain. We want to encourage and pass on the spiritual, holistic passion of the beauty of music. We strive to arm our students with knowledge by teaching our students how to learn and learning to love that the learning never really ends. We want to be honest and clear with our students about a changing industry that on the surface would seem not to support creative individuality, social conscience, or purpose. We want to redirect the youthful, restless creative energy towards that which will give true and lasting meaning to our biggest desires for our students, their success as citizens of the world, whose nurtured skills and talents help contribute to the proliferation of depthful music, regardless of style. Along with the other fine arts, music is a big part of what makes humans human. So it is important that we share information. Whatever parts of what is working for us at USC, which might inspire the possibilities for additional successes here at Amherst, is great and golden. Today's musician must be equipped with a working knowledge of many aspects of music and the professional music business. Every component is of value. And as we learn, so do we teach. There is a balance between commerce and art. One need not feel that an artistic aesthetic and excellence diminishes the raw or the truth or the heart of the performer. We have the ear of the student who is capable of finding the balance between mastery and marketing. If we show them the proper order and how the two are not mutually exclusive, our institutions must become a place for collaborations between departments and healthy, respectful interdepartmental projects and discussions. The greater good affects all music students, regardless of their category or emphasis. Continue to update and refocus the approaches to our teaching. And through popular music, we've begun to see how important this is. Students pick up much more than merely the class we teach. Our enthusiasm about the subjects we teach and our own commitment to detail and context, this energy and excitement is contagious. We need to be okay with the understanding that we will have to remind ourselves and sometimes also remind the more established areas of music study that popular music has a history and a tradition. Stylistic nuances specific to certain eras and regions are as important to learn about in this music as the differences in approach would be between playing a Bach fugue or a Beethoven sonata. We didn't all grow up listening to exactly the same things, so sharing knowledge and information on ways of keeping the history, the timeline, the social and geographical contexts accurate and authentic is critical. Making the musical vocabulary relevant and relatable is vital. Helping the students understand the connection and the continuum from Big Mama Thornton to Adele to Beyonce, from Jackie Wilson to James Brown to Michael Jackson, to Justin Timberlake to Bruno Mars, from The Last Poets to Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar, from Frank Sinatra to Michael Bublé. To know the game changers that were Sly Stone, The Beatles, Dylan, Stevie Wonder, Prince. And most importantly, equip the students with solid musical skills involving theory, reading, transcribing, ear training, sense of ensemble. Investigate creative ways which, through a contemporary music lens, we can apply these concepts to the understanding of the repertoire and vocabulary that we teach and on which the students will build. As teachers, we are counselors, advisors. We can and we do make a difference. What we do matters. Our work in popular music education gives us the opportunity to contribute to the ideas and ideals of success. My grandfather used to tell me, success is part inspiration, part motivation, and a lot of perspiration. And we must find ways to reinforce these kinds of ideas within ourselves and then model them to our students. We can and we must think differently, different ways, better ways, bold ideas on how we can address music with an eye towards its promotion, its perpetuation through commerce. We should also have as watchful an eye on its content, its relevance, and its quality. We can never relinquish what we know is the power of great music, written well and performed well and presented well. It has the power to move, to heal, to inspire people to greater heights. So to all of you who came here to support and to listen and to learn, I say bravo. Let's create educational environments which demonstrate for all our students that one way you nurture your dreams is by being informed of how knowledge from the past can frame and impact your future. And then you act in the now. Thank you so much for listening.
That was Patrice Rushen, chair of the Popular Music Program at the University of Southern California's Thornton School of Music, speaking on April 10th, 2017 at Amherst College. You've been listening to The College Connection from New England Public Radio, a series of lectures from visiting and local speakers given and recorded at the five colleges. You can find more College Connection online at nepr.net or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. For New England Public Radio, I'm Casey Gilman.